The Startup to Scale Up Game Plan is brought to you by Alpina Search, Europe's premier talent search firm, dedicated to helping technology startups and scale-ups recruit high-impact executives. Now over to your host, Gary Riemann.
I'm delighted to welcome Dan Boyer to this week's episode. Dan's a partner at Superseed Ventures, a £50 million seed fund, investing in technical founders who love business automation. Now, Dan has a radically different background to your typical VC, with a career that spans modeling, performing in a boy band, and presenting kids' TV shows before switching over to tech, entrepreneurship, and eventually venture capital. Dan's passionate about startups innovating and changing the world. He truly believes that startups will help us sort a lot of societal woes. And since it's not going to come from corporates, he's massively passionate about startups and founders. And he's determined to leave the world a better place than he found it. So Dan, a passionately warm welcome to this week's episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan.
Thanks, Gary. Lovely to be here.
So Dan, typically I zoom past my guests' backstory and focus on their more recent experiences, but your background is so intriguing and unconventional. I'd like to start there. So walk me through your undulating journey into the world of tech and venture capital.
As we were saying off mic, I don't know if there are any other VCs that have been in boy bands, but I dare say not. Conventional path. None of us in my firm, we're only a tiny firm of seven, but none of us in my firm have had a conventional path into VC. Most of us are ex-founder operators. My particular path is slightly even more left field sideways, but we are trying to do venture capital differently, very founder driven, which I know is cheese ball as hell to say. We are all trying to do VC in a new way, founder-focused, founder-centric, and trying to accelerate that journey from C to A. And that's what we're all about, and sales and commerciality and connectivity and all those great things. But I got into it randomly. When I left school, I was modeling and doing show hosting and all kinds of other crazy things, which I fell into just by random. I dated a girl whose sister was a photographer, and it was like, you know, like life can be super, super random. And then modeling, and then when I was young and pretty, and then boy bands and kids TV presenting. And I had a great time for about 5 years. I had a wonderful time between what would have been 18, or actually modeling was younger, it was like 15, 16, but 18 to 22, 23, let's call it. And then realized that I just didn't like this world. It's just a miserable place to be. Do you know what I realized? Being famous or being in the public eye, but not having the money to buy your reclusivity is a bloody miserable place to be, because everyone recognizes you, has an opinion about you or how useless rubbish you are, and talks to you like they know you. You don't have the money because you're not, you know, it's quite not lucrative, TV presenting and being in boy bands in the early days. It got lucrative towards the end, but... So, and I just didn't like it. I didn't like being on stage. I'm not a performer. I can't sing for toffee. I'm not a dancer. It was just, all of it was just hard work. But so I left, and then a friend of mine was running a learning center for Virgin Atlantic and asked me to build the tech. And I've always been good with building things and electronics and engineering. I've always been quite naturally handy at fixing and building and making. So I went off and did my Apple and my Windows engineer certifications. Took about 18 months to get fully qualified across both platforms. Back in the days when building tin and networks were important. They're not now, it's all in the cloud, but back then it was important. This was mid-90s, mid to late 90s. And these were super important things. And I loved it. And that was it. That was me. I was switched tech every which way. And then it was a very simple transition from hardware to software. And then I built a company, it basically doing what I was doing and enjoyed doing, which is building and installing tech and helping people use tech. Sold that, built a social media war room, sold that, did the ticketing, the VIP ticketing system for the British Olympics. That Atos took that. I didn't sell that, but that got taken away. But a video recruitment platform, sold that twice. And then just loved tech, founders, startups, dicking around, trying to change the world, trying to build new things. I just love nothing to something.
Now, were any of those businesses that you launched funded by VCs?
Yeah, so I raised a little bit of capital. I was fortunate enough to have money, and I was also property developing at a time when it was very lucrative. So I had money. I raised a little bit of venture, mainly angel, with a friend of mine for one of the platforms that we were building. Although you have to kind of qualify what is VC. There's a lot of VCs who are around, especially today, that are incubators or accelerators or other. It could be a CVC, it could be Hedge, it could be P, it could be, they're not actually what I would call classic venture capital. We did raise a little bit of VC and a little bit of angel, but I was fortunate enough. And also, I guess I didn't really want anyone else in my business, and I didn't want anyone else having any kind of control or dictating anything. So I kind of avoided it, which is a conversation I have a lot with founders these days. A lot of founders that come to me for cash, I tell them explicitly, do not raise from me. Do not raise from people like me. Consider this way and that way, and really, really, really think about if you want to build a venture scale business, because it's not for most, but I would say 0.001% of venture scale, venture ready.
What type of founder or startup is, in your opinion, suited to venture capital?
Venture capital is a very specific beast with a very specific mandate. It is looking for a global opportunity with speed of sale to speed of scale. And pretty much nothing else fits. So keep in mind that we are gamblers. My latest fund is going to invest in around 30 businesses at around a million and a half ticket, those kind of quantums. I only expect one to succeed. And by succeed, I mean return the fund. So that's my lens, is will you return this fund? It has to be global. It has to be speed of sale, speed to scale. Where are you on the J curve? Is there a trend that you're leaning into that is or has the potential to become a global game changer? And I only invest in back office business automation. I don't do faster e-scooters, grocery deliveries, crypto nonsense, metaverse nonsense. That, I find those rude. They offend me to my core. And venture capital, thank goodness, has moved beyond this past the parcel moment in time where I could invest a dollar in some awful, useless, non-business model business and then make two in 6 months. Those days are over for the short to medium term. So venture capital is back to fundamentals. Great. That's all I've ever done. That's all I know. That's all I ever want to invest in. I don't care about the crap, the consumer nonsense, the non-business model, business model nonsense. Those things offend me to my core. But if you're a founder building a fundamentals business, which is truly going to transform how things are done, and you can go global and you can be a fund returner, that's my lens.
Recently, you wrote on LinkedIn, your passion is wrapped around founder mental health and mental strength. That's my jam. So what are you doing to help founders build their mental health and mental strength?
I have two core purposes. Well, I have three core. My core purpose, well, the reason I get out of bed is to help people build things that will help people. That's the kind of the macro, that's the top level piece. What can I do to support you, Mr. and Mrs. Founder, in building a toolkit that's going to transform how people work or how people do? I also want to see more women in power. So the second thing on my list really is how do we get, I promise I will get to your question. If we get more women in power, generally, just to lose friends, the world will be a better place. So more women in venture, which is something I can control, more women in startups, which is something I can have a semi-handle on, more women in politics, more women in business, more women in the FTSE 100 board. I mean, just more women generally, the world instantly a better place. And the third piece, and these aren't in any particular order, but the third piece is around mental health to mental strength. Now, I don't like some of the conversations around mental health because I find them quite pejorative, and I think they don't serve founders well. They don't serve the community well. But I am very passionate, open, and conversant around converting mental health and getting all of those basics right, and then transforming that into mental strength and optimizing performance. Because to me, mental health is a state of neutrality. But mental strength and performance is where you need to operate as a founder. So I talk about both spaces. I will make it patently clear to founding teams when I meet them that I'm very comfortable having very awkward conversations, especially around the things that bother us. I've just written a book about the psychology of fundraising. I talk a lot on LinkedIn around sharing the good, the bad, the ugly from both sides of the desk, just to try and lean into what is mental health, what is mental strength, how do we perform, what is required from venture capital to perform. So I'm just trying to be vocal. I'm trying to connect the dots. I'm trying to be the best version of it that I can be. I mean, you have to live by example. So I'm just trying to do all of those things. And hopefully by the books, by the blog, by the LinkedIn content, by podcasts like this, then the conversation can pervade and hopefully we can get more coaching, more frameworks discussed, more content out there from multiple threads, just to make sure that what I care about, the founder community, are doing everything they can to transition through this from the mental health piece into this performative piece.
Have you had any founders quite clearly starting to struggle with mental health, maybe during the COVID period, maybe for other reasons, where you've had to introduce them to specific methods, frameworks, or even coaches to help them through the challenges they're facing?
I think COVID was a tough time for a lot of people because it was so isolating. I didn't have any specific founder challenges in that space because being a founder is incredibly isolating. And the kind of people that are founders, I mean, you've got the psychopaths at one end, and then you've got this myopic, I'm going to sell my grandmother to succeed, kind of in this kind of, not at the other end, but in this kind of middle tier. And most founders that I know work with are slightly cooked anyway, slightly unemployable, slightly difficult, unusual characters in many ways. However, that said, often those kinds of people can sometimes be the kind of crusty on the outside, soft in the middle kind of characters where there are other things going on. I think most of the conversations that I have around the negative or the challenging side of mental health when people fall off their perch is not necessarily around COVID as a specific, but it's, you know, they're going through a divorce or they're having money problems or they started gambling or their child is sick. There's other things that, I mean, you have your personal life and what goes on there. Then you have your work life. And when you're founding, everything is interwound and your work is your personal, your personal is your work. And you're probably doing 20-hour days. It's just a constant drumbeat of what do you need? How are you? What's happening? Which I would do regardless of COVID. So no, I didn't see any specific COVID challenges apart from the fundraising environment, the client sales environment, which became very problematic. I also think that when you're in it, you're fine. It's when you're on the other side of it or you go on holiday, that's when you collapse. So there have been some incidents in the more recent months, but they haven't been necessarily connected to any specific event. I think it's normally, you know, a bit like when a plane crashes, it's never one thing. There's always five or six things that knock on and create a knock on that causes founding teams challenges.
Well, it's typically when these various stresses and strains build up over time, it's typically going to affect your mental and to some extent your physical health there.
Yeah, they're so interlinked. I mean, mental is physical, physical is mental. You cannot be mentally unwell in any flavor and for it not to affect your physical health. And the same vice versa, I don't think. Especially when men are feeling ill, we turn into grumpy asses because we just can't cope, whereas women can probably spin 30 more plates and do a raft of other features where men generally fall off their perch.
Exactly. So this is where I'm just going to throw into the mix the idea of Qigong, which is something I've discovered in the last 12 months, and I highly recommend it should you or anyone in the portfolio. It's Qigong. It's a 4,000-year-old ancient Chinese practice. It combines a mixture of breathing or breath work, acupressure, and movement, moving the energy around the body, the qi, the various meridians, and it's a wonderful way of sorting both mental and physical.
I totally buy it. My friend has bought me a book, I think it's called Breath, where it's all about breathing through the nose and how important it is that we breathe through the nose and how we breathe. We take it all for granted. We need to focus on it a bit more.
If that's the James Nestor book, which I yes. think it probably is, so some of his ideas are drawn from Qigong. So yeah, it's a great book. I highly recommend that book. Moving on from that, although actually in a way not that far from that, because this is about how you've been feeling lately. I mean, you posted that you were feeling off kilter. You were out in Dubai. You're getting concerned about the escalating situation in Gaza and Israel. I guess the conflict in Ukraine, which is still very much with us, sadly. And the general state of the world as we move towards 2024, facing huge geopolitical, environmental, societal upheavals. So as a VC, what do you feel you can or should do to help address some of these challenges?
I think if you have any form of empathy at all, which perhaps VCs are not known for, I don't think you can look at the world today and think anything other than this is a bit of a fuck show. I know that we've seen worse. I know that there are constantly challenges in the globalized world that we still live in. But it just feels like the reason I wrote that post was it just feels like there's an acceleration or there's an elaborated moment in time and some form of extra shit fest that we're going through. And a lot of it, I think, is driven by what we have tolerated from our political leaders. And if you look at the likes of Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage or Donald Trump or Le Pen, or I mean, across the world, I don't know how, but we tolerate these awful systems and these awful ways of governing. Or we have octogenarians in office like Biden. I mean, every time he opens his mouth, I just hope he's going to get to the end of his sentence. I want a 40-year-old in office. I want a younger person in office. I want somebody who's dynamic. But then we've got a system where nobody would ever, who is ever a decent human being, would ever put themselves up to be a politician because we've broken it. And then war and climate change. I go to the local supermarket and I see the food banks loading up and loading up and the space for the food banks getting bigger and bigger. And it just breaks my heart to think that there are kids. A friend of mine does some tech for a couple of the supermarkets, and he was in a Morrison's where somebody fainted in the aisle from lack of food. I mean, all of these things are biting me and biting me more. So I hadn't written for a while as well, and that was what triggered it. So I like writing. Every day I write something just to get something out of my head and understand. So I write to learn, not to teach. It's a way of expressing and learning that I find really useful. And I found that I'd stopped writing. And then it was when I was in Dubai, I was like, I haven't written anything for a couple of weeks. I'm just not feeling right for all of these reasons. Now, what can venture capital do? Very little. I mean, venture capital is designed to make money. We are not a charity. We are a brutal mechanism. And we are designed to brutally make money from the outliers. We're gamblers. That's what venture capital is. That said, you can only make change with money. We have money. We can make change. And we can hire more women, which we do. We can invest in more women, which is really, really hard in B2B. And I keep getting punched in the face because everybody throws the 2% stat at me and only 2% of women or female-led teams get venture capital, which is nonsense. There is no women in the pot in the first place. And then everybody punches me in the face again because there are loads of amazing women. I said, well, they're not in my pipeline. Well, that's because you're all two middle-aged white men. I was like, fine. I'm telling you now, I have all the data. They are not there and they are not getting funded because they're not there. Is there a greater percentage of women not getting funded for the wrong reasons? Yes. Do we need to fix it? Absolutely. But it's so micro. This isn't the problem to solve. We need more women in the pot in the first place. That is the problem to solve that we need to get onto. So I only invest in transformative tech. So I only invest effectively in efficiency and resource, efficiency and optimization. That's all I invest in, which is very naturally going to enable companies to do more with less. That is a massive game changer. The companies that I invest in are massive game changers for big business. So your pair of jeans, which takes 40 liters of water to make, now takes 5 because of a platform that one of our founding teams has built. Or that supply chain that you're managing, or that AI algorithm that you need, or those things we can create massive efficiencies over. Of course, most of that just returns to shareholder capital, shareholder returns, which is not always great, but that job still needs to be done. What else can venture capital do to make the world a better place? It can be more open and vocal about what it is and what it isn't. I'm also keen to introduce more funding models, building now a platform that will help democratize access to capital. So a network effect platform that if you submit your pitch deck to me and I'm not the right partner, it automatically gets pushed to the right partners and analyzed. There are lots of things that I and we can do, but it's not our place to make the world a better place. We are not the machinery for it. So everything I'm trying to make venture capital better, smarter, brighter at, it doesn't natively care about. It doesn't care about more women. It doesn't care about democratized access. It doesn't care about Black people or brown people or trisexual. That's not what venture capital is built to do. As unpopular, as unfriendly, and as unpleasant as that is, it's not what VC is for. VC is for a very specific task, but we don't have to be assholes about it. And we can be smarter and we can be brighter and we can be more mindful. I will always shine the light on that. And I will always have the hardest conversations about it. And I'm really comfortable with that.
Let's lighten things up a bit.
Was that a bit dark? Sorry.
Well, no, I asked the question. You answered it. What's the funniest or craziest startup pitch you've ever seen?
You see some founders and founding teams that are obviously living on planet Zanussi. I won't name any names, it's not fair, but we see, I don't get that many because as we've started to build the brand, we're starting to be known for what we do. And it's taken a number of years. So in the early days, we would get all kinds of weird and wonderful consumer tech or whatever it might be, which is not what we invest in. Now it's become a little bit more refined because we're starting to build a little bit of a brand presence. Every now and then I will look at something and it's often things like, not the proposition, which are more often than not just really generic, not thought through, not differentiated. And I love founders for this because they're so hell-bent on what they're doing, but they haven't looked at the market and they haven't worked out who really cares and how much money there is to be made. But what they will do is then value their business at, you know, they'll want to raise 10 million quid at a 60 million pound valuation off the back of a napkin. It's like, oh my God, guys and girls, come on. I mean, just, this is not how it works. And all you're doing implicitly is showing me how little you know about not only your business, but the business of investing. So it's just like, it makes you completely uninvestable. I can't think of any crazy, crazy platforms or crazy, crazy technologies. We would get back in the day, lots and lots of crypto stuff, which offends me to my core, which was basically just either theft or some form of unpleasant business model, which was bordering on theft. So those kinds of things were quite common. And obviously you'll see a lot of founders jump on bandwagons. So when blockchain was a thing, everything was blockchain. When AI was a thing, everything was AI. And it's like, do you really need a blockchain database? Do you really need a decentralized ledger to run your business? No, you don't. So you get a lot of founders using the latest words and phrases to try and look cool. I don't know if that answers your question, but I can't remember the last time I saw something outlandishly ridiculous as a piece of technology. I don't tend to see those ones.
That's a shame that you haven't got an outlandish, ridiculous example.
Yeah, sorry.
But let's see if you've got one of these instead. So of all the companies you've invested in, which one makes you feel the most proud that you backed their leaders and their vision?
There isn't one startup that we've backed that I don't feel that way about. If you're asking me, do I have a favorite child? Yes, I had a favorite child, but it just exited. It was a company called Garvis. They help large FMCG, so any large consumer goods business, understand and manage their supply chains. How many deodorants should I make if I'm whatever, Procter & Gamble, and how many should I ship to Bristol or New York or whatever it might be? And they had such a fascinating take on the market and such an incredible product where most of the market would take months and months and months to get time to value. So if you bought it as a client, it would take months to see value and you would never know how questions were being answered. So you'd sit there with your planning desk and go, I don't know why you've told me to make 5 deodorants and ship them to New York. Whereas this was time to value in hours and open white box solutions. So all of the clients could see how decisions were being made and then interrogate the decision-making process. And they could take 2-3% off the bottom line for whatever, P&G, Coca-Cola, Q8, whoever, a lot of their clients. And that 2-3% is billions of dollars. So it was such a transformative product in such a transformative space at a moment in time where supply chains were being squeezed by Russia, Ukraine, and the global slowdown and decoupling and America, China, and et cetera, et cetera. So it was just, it was the right thing at the right time by the right people doing amazing things. And we sold the business within a year, which is super unusual, obviously, for a seed fund. I wanted them to go the distance, but they were made such a lucrative offer. So, okay, like, I could block it. I'm not going to. That's just an awful thing to do. But it was such an exciting ride. It was fascinating.
Think back to when you first got into VC. So if you could go back in time and have a conversation with young Dan or younger Dan, based on everything you've learned over the last few years of being a venture capitalist, what's the one piece of advice you'd love to give your younger self?
Many years ago, I was tour managing my girlfriend's band. She was in a successful band, and I was tour managing and helping them set up across mainly Asia. And I spent a lot of time with her manager, who was an old record plugger back in the days when, if you were a record plugger, you would sit outside Radio One or Capital Radio and try and meet the DJs and give them your physical LP, single, then later days CD or whatever it might be. And he hated his job. He hated being a manager of bands. He despised it. I spent a lot of time with his wife as well. And it just blew my mind that he was doing something that he actively disliked. I actively dislike being a venture capitalist. I have no time for the industry, the mechanisms, the machinery. I am extremely passionate and have an intense love affair and desire to work with smart founders, smart founding teams. I do not have the money personally to invest the hundreds of millions of pounds that I will end up investing in early stage tech. But what I've learned is that you can be extremely good at your job and extremely focused and well-versed when you don't like something. And I think there is this kind of oddness where we feel, what's the phrase? Find a job that you love and never work a day in your life, or some bullshit. It's just not true. What is true is falling in love with the business that does your business. That I totally buy into. But I don't care for venture capital in any way, shape, or form. So going back to advise my younger self, I would just remind my younger self that it's okay that you actively dislike this industry. You have to be in it to win it. The only way you're going to make change with founding teams is to take other people's cash and to invest it. That's the only way that you can do the thing that you are passionate about. This whole vehicle is like, I couldn't give two shits about. Helping founders build transformative businesses, I'm all over and will do for the rest of my life in some way, shape, or form. So I don't know if this answers your question, but if I was to go back, I would possibly just remind myself that that's okay. Just say, look, you're going to go through some pain and turmoil, get over it quicker, be smarter about it, and just keep your eye on the prize.
In view of your feelings about the whole venture capital life world model, do you think you might one day go back into running your own business, something transformational where you're taking the money from the VCs?
I wouldn't raise venture capital. I would potentially build more businesses. There would have to be very specific things that are truly going to move the needle. Perhaps in politics, government, perhaps in the startup ecosystem. I think I mentioned before, I'm helping a founding team build a platform that I'm going to support and also be a customer of, which will help enable founders get more access to the right capital. And I think what I will do is over time is build these little utilities. So rather than some venture backable one thing, I'll probably build 4, 5, 10 different utilities that will enable or transform the spaces that I have most trouble with, whether that's education or healthcare or the industry that I'm in, investment. I'd like to build a platform that supports a better government for the UK that could then potentially go global. So there are things. I mean, I'm in no rush. I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm committed to this fund cycle and the next fund cycle and their 10-year funds. I'm no spring chicken. I'm 51 in a month, so I don't have the energy. Founding is a young person's game, and I know that all the old people that are listening to this will again punch me in the face, but it's a younger person's game. I don't believe in old or young. I think there is an energy quotient to it that is really important. Yes, maybe, probably, possibly not. I think what I can do is guide investment and support to teams that are making transformational change, and I can help more people do more in with that vehicle.
I want to circle back on a topic you flagged a couple of times: getting more females into tech, getting more females into founding and leading VC-backed businesses.
If they want to.
I mean, how do you see that happening? What is it you see as possible solutions to the lack of diversity, the lack of gender diversity we're focusing on now, at least, in tech and in VC-backed businesses?
There need to be more women in the industry to be heroed, and for more women to see other women working in these spaces, in these ways. There needs to be more grassroots at school, in the education system, around opportunities. I mean, it's not that you can force whomever, whatever group, creed, color, race, to think in a certain way or join a certain industry or start a certain business. And that's not the point. The point here is that there is a more level playing field. There are heroes in the ecosystem. There is an education and opportunity availability where people, in the most broadest sense, can see what's available to them. I don't necessarily subscribe to the gender challenge or the race challenge. I think there is more a socioeconomic challenge. Yes, there are problems with all forms of DEI, but I think there is something that's almost always glossed over, which is wealth disparity and the socioeconomic aspects of it. And obviously baked into that are underrepresented founders naturally. Founding a business is hard. It's very Maslow driven. You know, if you come from a wealthy background, a good education, a good home life, you will see naturally more opportunities because you're higher up Maslow. There are natural and inherent things, and not everyone is designed to be a founder, regardless, again, of gender, creed, race, color, or age. And I'm going to do more talks in schools. I'm going to hopefully set up get a regular spot in schools to do more in general studies and talk about investing and money and politics and relationships, because those kinds of things are just negated or missed off the curriculum. I will actively do more of that and hopefully create a framework for more people to get engaged and involved in that. I'm on the board of a group called Female Founders Rise, run by Emmy Faust, who are working solely with women entrepreneurs. And I will do pitch reviews, talks, insights into the specifics of investment and building startups for that community, of which they're now in the thousands. It's a big, broad, hairy, scary topic. I often get in trouble saying the wrong things. That's never the intent. I want to have the difficult conversations that are not so emotively driven that they get off topic. The tech press will often tout like the 2% stuff. You'll often see the 2% thing touted around by Sifted and TechCrunch. It's just bullshit. It's just not true. It's not in context. And that annoys me because it just it diverts the conversation away from solution. And it just enrages women to think, oh my God, the VCs are assholes. They're not giving us money. It's like, you're not there. You're not there in the first place. We can do a lot more to encourage more of more to get into the environment and be aware of the environment and create more heroes within the environment. but we're not a charity. I'm not going to invest in a female founder because she's a woman. I do look at female founding teams 3, 4, 5 times more than I look at male team because I see so few of them in the pipeline. Maybe 1 in 200, 1 in 300 that comes into our pipeline is female founded. So it's 0.5, 0.25, it's tiny percentages. I think we can be more visible. We can communicate in different ways. We can educate more. We can share more. We can be more available in more spaces. I would like to see more investors do all of that.
Mm. Do you think if you had a senior female in your team that you might attract more female-led companies, or do you think that's bullshit?
I don't know. We looked to hire a female partner, which is actually against the law. We looked to hire a female partner last year. So we mapped all of the venture capital firms in the UK around, I think it was around 200 relevant venture capital firms in the UK. Less than half had a woman in the investment team. It was around 40% had a woman in the investment team, and they were very few and far between. I spoke to every single person I could find, and we hired a very expensive headhunter to help us find a female partner, and we failed. It's not a game over. We'll continue to look and continue to speak. I mean, the last three hires we've made have all been women. Again, I can't say that because it's probably illegal, but we are very, very conscious to not to be representative and to have different energies in our investment teams and to see the world in new ways and different ways. And that's not just male, female. That's old, young, black, white, gay, straight. There's a bunch of vectors in there. But women is a big part of it. And it's a big passion of mine. Same with finding founding teams. I don't believe that female founders wouldn't not come to us because the company is run by 2 middle-aged white men. I'd like to think that wouldn't be the case. Maybe it is. I think we can change the language that we use. I think we can change how we present. I think we can talk in different forums in different ways. But the bottom line is that most founders that are raising venture capital just want the money, and they will do whatever it takes to raise the capital. And that's part of the game, and that's part of how it works. And if you don't have those chops, then you shouldn't be raising capital in the first place.
Absolutely. Well, we've covered everything from boy bands to diversity in tech and VC. We've put the worlds to right to some extent during this conversation. Been great getting to know a bit about you, your journey and your vision for the future. Good luck with the platform and with the various initiatives that you're getting involved in education and female founders, et cetera. And it's been great having you on this week's episode. Thanks for joining me, Dan.
Thanks, Gary. I hope I haven't alienated too many of your listeners. Thank you for having me.
This episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan was brought to you by Alpina Search. Head over to www.alpinasearch.com for advice on scaling your technology startup and recruiting high-impact senior talent.